Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to Inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast on thesportsvirus.com and now on KNBR.com, featuring Giants players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Toscalito Tire and Automotive, with four Marin locations, plus the marina in San Francisco and Vallejo. Toscalito, more than just a tire store. We're also brought to you by Rita's of Hayward, serving Italian ice and frozen custard. Today's guest is John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. Well, John, the Giants, they blew an opportunity as far as the Dodgers series, losing two out of three, even, you know, having the Mets and the Cardinals lose on the, you know, one day there at the end of the series where, you know, the Giants had a chance to make some ground there, maybe pull into the lead. They don't do that. Now they face the San Diego Padres. And you just recently wrote a little story about the Padres kind of being a nuisance for the San Francisco Giants because they haven't beaten them in the second half. 0-6 against San Diego, the worst team in the division. You know, why is that? Why are the Giants struggling so much against the Padres? We know about their other issues that they've had in the second half, but why the Padres making it even worse on them?
For a team that was 9-0 against the Padres and now 0-6 in the second half against the Padres, it's just another part of this mysterious second half that they're running through. Now, I mean, they began the second half with San Diego, Boston, New York, and obviously they figured, well, the first part's going to be a little easier. And then they were just outscored every game. One of them, one of the Casillo meltdowns, the walk-off balk, and it just seemed to get uglier and uglier, and then they just never rebounded. They couldn't put any kind of streak together, and it's almost like they have issues against young pitchers without much of a track record, and it seems like they're all up for the Kershaws and the Hills and the Maedas and whoever they might see in L.A. or, you know, against better teams, the Wainwrights, right? I mean, it just seems that it's a more competitive game against better pitchers. And then when they go up against pitchers they don't know of or don't have a track record against, it just seems that, you know, they're the inferior team and they just can't handle it. It's a weird phenomenon. And they have a chance to reverse that trend with the Padres. But you're right, the Padres are shaping this division, whether they know it or not. I mean, who would have thunk that? I mean, it's the Giants have not beaten them going into this series in San Diego in the second half. And meanwhile, the Dodgers have. Since early July, they've beaten them five of seven times, and they play the Padres right after the Giants play the Padres. So it's weird. It's a weird concept to deal with, but it's just one of the many mysteries for the Giants in the second half.
Yeah, there have been a lot of them. They've definitely had to deal with injuries earlier this year, and you know they got Hunter Pence back and Joe Panik back, and it just took a while, I think, for the team to get into sync. But the two players, I think, John, that they could never really do without and go anywhere is Buster Posey, of course, and Brandon Crawford. And right now, he's out of the lineup, and you can't even afford to have him out for a couple of days, it seems to me. I mean, now he's got that dislocated pinky. I mean, you put Adrianza in there, you just lose so much defensively and offensively. Do you agree?
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Cueto and Crawford, the two guys that they happen to be missing. But
well,
right.
Cueto too, yeah.
Posey and Crawford, or first Bumgarner position, yeah. And Crawford. But anyone in Crawford, you know, Gold Glove winner, Silver Slugger winner, he's really the captain of that infield. You talk to the grounds crew guys, and they do things as Crawford wants it, not how Panic or Belt or anybody else wants it. That infield is made for Brandon Crawford and groomed for Brandon Crawford. He's such a key to this team. And last year he broke out offensively, and he can drive the ball against lefties or righties, and I believe he's the best defensive shortstop in the National League, if not baseball. And you're right. The pitcher's best friend. They see the ball and they say, oh no, and then they say, oh yeah, Crawford's back there. It's not a problem. And he's ended so many rallies with his glove. And you could tell the expression on his face when he jammed that finger and dislocated that finger. He looked at it and said, oh, my goodness. I remember talking to Crawford a couple years ago about sliding head first. And I was asking him, why do you do it? This was in the wake of him being hurt the previous year and missing some time and not being all there offensively, his numbers nosediving, because he jammed a couple fingers on a head first slide. And he said, it's the way I've always done it. It's the way I'll probably always do it. I get there faster. It takes me through the bag. But so many people in baseball will tell you not to do it. And if you do it right. I mean, this is Crawford who has done it so long throughout college and pro ball and now the big leagues. And 99 out of 100, no injury. And who's to say he wouldn't have hurt an ankle or a knee sliding leg first? But in this case, it just looks so blatant that he jams a finger because he didn't elevate it above the bag on a slide to third. And then Seager falls on top of him. And it just didn't look good. And it's such the, you know, just the wrong time for this to happen. And him and Cueto being out, it's just not great for morale, not great emotional boost when you lose two key figures like that. But on the positive side, neither is supposed to miss much time.
We'll have more with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this.
You have to admit, collecting World Series titles is a new trend for the Giants, but at Toscalito Tire and Automotive, they've been winning since 1971 with quality tires and reliable auto and light truck repair at 6 Bay Area locations near you. Toscalito Tire and Automotive will take care of you like family, and they offer a nationwide warranty backed by the strength of the Goodyear Tire and Service Network. And unlike watching close Giants games, going to Toscalito equals a stress-free life. No torture at Toscalito Tire and Automotive. With 4 Marin locations, plus the marina in San Francisco and Vallejo, Toscalito, more than just a tire store.
Well, as we speak here, there's still a chance that Johnny Cueto could go on Sunday, but if they decide to push him back a little bit and err on the side of caution, who do you think starts in his place? And there, you know, there's plenty of choices, I guess. I guess you could go with Jake Peavy or Matt Cain. I mean, for me, my choice would be Ty Block. And I know that's probably the way a lot of people are thinking after watching the way he's pitched out of the bullpen in his first couple of appearances as a major leaguer. And he had a really good year at AAA. You know, it just seems like he's ready to get that opportunity.
Absolutely. I'm 100% with you on that. You never know with Matt Cain. He could be out in the second inning. Peavy could be out in the second inning. They haven't proven over any kind of extended stretch that they're the guy to go to. And Ty Block, why not? None is a sure thing, but he's got the best upside. Give it a whirl. And if it's not going to happen, you got a million guys in the bullpen to go to in a hurry. But, yeah, you're right. Block, 6 scoreless innings since he arrived, a couple of appearances. It's been in garbage time, but still, it's 6 scoreless innings. And those two other guys can't say that. And he had a good year in AAA. You know, it wasn't a first-year AAA guy, right? It's his second year. And he had a 3.5 ERA, sub-3.5 ERA. And the Pacific Coast League, that's very good. So it's not, he's not a big strikeout guy. He's not a guy who's just going to overpower you. But he's a get-it-done guy. And, you know, maybe those guys are underrated. And they're going to need a fifth starter next year. And now is as good a time as any to see if this guy can do it. Because who knows? Maybe he is the inspiration that you'll need if he gets the ball and gives you 6-7 solid innings.
Inspiration, that's a good word, because it seems like the Giants really need that. And I was wondering about the whole attitude of this team, because they've played so badly in the second half, but every time they look at the standings, it's like, oh yeah, we still have a chance, you know? And I think a lot of fans have actually given up on them, thinking, you know, this isn't a World Series type team, but yet here they are. You know, they go into the last week or so of the season, and they've got a chance. They've got these home games. I don't know if it's going to be an electric atmosphere at AT&T Park for the Rockies series or even the Dodgers series like it would be, because people aren't behind the team maybe as much as they would be. I don't know. What's your sense of it from, you know, if not only a fan standpoint, but just even players? Because looking at it realistically, saying we're not playing like a team that's going to go anywhere.
Yeah, if this is a three-team wild card race, it's not really who will win the most. It's almost who will lose the least.
Right.
It's not as if any team is just taking this thing and running with it. It's well, who can just survive and tread water? And I guess, you know, with the Giants, it's just every other year it's a different angle. And you remember 2010, and they won on the last day of the season just to get there. 2012, they had the fewest home runs in the majors and got there. And then 2014, they were a wild card team and got there. So maybe this is just more of the same. They deke you into believing that they're the underdogs, and then in October they turn it up. But who knows if they'll reach October this year? It might be the end of the even year streak. Certainly, the bullpen is nowhere near any of those bullpens in 10, 12, and 14.
Not at all.
And that's just a huge disadvantage because nobody Bochy can rely on in the eighth or ninth inning, especially the ninth. Breaking franchise records for most blown saves, relying on a closer who just can't get it done over and over and over, and they're just pulling names out of a hat now in the ninth inning. I guess Romo is the latest flavor. I'm still waiting for Joe Nathan to appear. I'm not sure why they haven't given him a chance. I understand he's got a couple of saves in his career, but the young guys they rely on, but they don't give them much of a leash, and deservedly so. So now it's Romo's turn, and he's got less than a couple of weeks to figure this thing out. And right now it doesn't look good, but I think that's going to be the difference maker. If they can get a couple of saves by somebody, maybe they survive this thing.
More with San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea in just a moment. If the hot summer has you thinking of ways to cool down, we have the best way to do it. How about a cool, refreshing dessert from Rita's Italian Ice of Hayward? Over 70 flavors of Italian ice to choose from and 8 flavors of their award-winning frozen custard. The combinations are endless. Made fresh daily on site, many of Rita's Italian ices include fresh fruit. Plus, they have frozen custard, custard cookie sandwiches, and custom frozen custard cakes. And Rita's of Hayward offers catering for all types of events. Mention the sports virus, and you will receive 1 free regular size Italian ice with a purchase. Rita's Italian Ice of Hayward, celebrating their first year at 26775 Hayward Boulevard. Cool off today. If you're Bobby Evans and Brian Sabian in the offseason, is that the A number one priority? Upgrade the bullpen? Find a closer? I mean, is that above and beyond anything? Because it seems like, you know, that's been a major issue. But, you know, of course, there are other issues like the offense not scoring as much as you would like or hitting in the clutch the way you would like. But do you put that at the top shelf?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can look at the offense and you can say, well, you know, Pence missed a bunch of time again for the second straight year, and Panic had the concussion, and both those guys came back. It was like they were on rehab assignments. They just weren't ready, but they were playing through it. And Duffy, of course, injured, might have accelerated his trade. Posey obviously is not 100%. I don't think he has been for weeks. So if you look at the offense, you would say, well, if healthy, they'd be doing a lot better than this, and they have proven that they could. You're going to need a left fielder, obviously, with Pagan being a free agent. I don't think they're going to bring him back.
No.
There's really no reason to. They got to upgrade defensively, and they need some more power at that position. The rotation, obviously, is set 1-4 with Bumgarner, Cueto, whose opt-out isn't after next season, so, and then Samardzija and Moore, and whoever's the number 5 guy. But then you look in the bullpen, Casilla, free agent, Lopez, free agent, Romo, free agent. I mean, all of those could follow Affelt out the door this winter, and the core four would be no more. And what are you left with? Well, Derek Law, very good, probably maybe their best reliever this year. Will Smith, sure. Contos, yeah. You've got Osich and Strickland and some other guys, but who's the closer among those guys? Yeah, none of them right now. Who's the setup guy? I don't know. Maybe Law fills one of the spots, but you know, I think you're looking at wholesale changes, big time, like the A's in the off season. If you remember, the A's were pretty bad in the bullpen. All those one-run losses and all those blown saves. I mean, they were they were this year's Giants. And they went out and got Ryan Mattson and Axford and Liam Hendricks and Zepchinski and all these guys. And they were expecting a healthy Doolittle. So they really upgraded their bullpen. And I think that's what the Giants have to do exactly. Not just one guy. You know, not just, but I think they, and it's not just one young guy. I think they need to go. And they might have to need to spend some money. You know, they missed out on the big guys at the trade deadline, you know, Melanson and Miller and Chapman, I guess. And, you know, I guess they'll have more chances because, you know, Chapman can be a free agent, Melanson can be a free agent, and then the Dodger guy, Jansen. So there are going to be some big money guys out there. They weren't willing to give up the farm at the trade deadline, but maybe they'll be willing to give up a whole bunch of their cash to get one of these guys.
Yeah, they have to do something. I agree. I mean, it's got to be wholesale changes in the bullpen. I mean, they're fortunate that they do have 80% of their rotation intact, and they're, you know, it seems like they're pretty pleased with that. But one big question, I think, though, too, John, when you get into, you know, looking at the offseason and spring training, is how much do you spend on a left fielder? And you had a look at Mack Williamson and Jarrett Parker. I don't think they showed enough that you can just hand them the keys to the Cadillac and say, okay, you're playing left field. It just doesn't seem like that's going to work. So I guess you got to spend some more money out there in left field.
Yeah, and if they, I mean, remember, they gave up a bunch of prospects for three guys at the trade deadline. And will teams be willing to take their remaining prospects in the, I don't know. Maybe they'll have to bring in a guy to play left field.
Unless Christian Arroyo can play the outfield, which we don't know.
Well, yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. What kind of pop does he have?
Right.
Is he going to be an immediate power guy? Probably not.
Probably
maybe
not.
That's a development over time. But if you look at the free agent markets, you know, the Bay Area fans can cite three old A's, right? Cespedes is going to be a free agent. Josh Reddick is going to be a free agent. And our old friend Brandon Moss. All those guys could play some left field, right?
Right.
Cespedes obviously is the number one guy, and he's going to be the high money guy. He'll go, you know, the Mets would love to have him back, and a bunch of teams would love to have him. But he did like the Bay Area when he was here. And, you know, it's tough to beat that ballpark, and it's not a real tough position to play left field, you know, unlike center field and right field at that place. And, you know, he wouldn't have to play center. It used to be his favorite position, but maybe, you know, years later he's fine just being set in left field. And, you know, it's definitely a power position. But imagine that guy in the middle of the lineup. That suddenly changes everything.
Yeah, I guess Cespedes, Chapman, and then it's an odd year World Series title. No problem.
Hey, it ain't my money.
We'll continue the conversation with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this.
Hey, how'd you get those cool new shirts for the trade show so fast?
Access!
Who makes all that great clothing for high schools and colleges?
Access!
How do I get my company logo embroidered on some nice polo shirts?
Access!
Access Uniforms is your go-to resource for customized clothing. Just call us to find the right product, email your artwork, and your order will be on its way directly from our factory right here in Burlingame. Call Access Uniforms at 877-755-LOGO. That's 877-755-LOGO.
It's a real treat in that last series with the Dodgers at AT&T Park because it's also the last series for Vin Scully in his 67-year career. That last game on Sunday, October the 2nd, that's really going to be a treat. And you've had a chance to cover this as it goes along, you know, with the Giants in L.A. And I know you covered a conference call that the media had with Vinny. Tell us a little bit about, you know, just your personal thoughts of Scully retiring. We're going to miss him a lot, aren't we?
Boy, we sure are doing a lot of stories in these final days. You know, I've spoken with a lot of people who've come through town. You know, Dick Enberg with the Padres, Tim McCarver with the Cardinals. Spoke with all the Giants broadcasters, the A's guys, the Spanish guys, the former guys. Kind of a big Bay Area slant on a story I'm working on. And you know, everyone has a great Scully story. Everyone admires the guys as the best who pretty much ever did this. But, you know, going back in the Bay Area, obviously I was one of many, you know, had a transistor radio late at night picking up KFI
right.
In the late 60s, early 70s. you could pick up his feed, and you know that 71 race was pretty tight. The Giants and Dodgers all the way to the finish, and you know you could hear Lon in the afternoon, then you could hear Vinny at night. So you can kind of follow that race, and obviously that was before games were televised on any kind of consistent basis. So that was kind of a neat thing to get an introduction. You know, a wide, you know, big difference from Lon in that, you know, he was more straightforward and Lon was kind of the funny guy, and both told stories in different ways. And obviously Vinny, probably the best storyteller among any broadcaster.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, and then in the 80s when I began covering baseball as a beat writer in San Diego, I met him, and, you know, obviously a thrill. And I kind of knew, you know, growing up that this guy was incredible with his research, and then I kind of learned firsthand that he probably did more homework than any, you know, major league play-by-play guy I've ever come across. He just, you know, is just amazing with and not just the research, but the background going back to covering Jackie Robinson, following his early games. You know, 1950 was his first year. So anyway, you fast forward to a couple of years ago when I just walked into his booth at AT&T Park and, you know, seeking an interview. I had spoken with him over time, but I kind of wanted to do an angle from the Giants' perspective. And, you know, I'll never forget this. It was a few hours before a game, and, you know, he gave me a half hour of his time. I didn't have anything scheduled. I just walked in, and he turned around, and it was funny. It was 5-10 minutes in, he finally gave me a chance to ask my first question. I mean, it was like he knew exactly what I was there for. And, you know, and he told me, you know, about growing up at the Polo Grounds, and, you know, that special day to his, October 6th, 1936, when he became a Giant fan and noticed a score of Game 2 of the World Series on a storefront, Yankees 18, Giants 4. And he felt sorry for the Giants and therefore befriended the Giants, became a faithful fan, and, you know, he used to go out to the bleachers at the Polo Grounds, and he used to look up at the press box and wish that he could be up there someday. And then years later, when he became the Dodger announcer and went back to the Polo Grounds, he sat up in the press box and looked out over the bleachers and recalled his childhood. So it's just, you know, the circle became complete. And, I mean, the story is just amazing. And, you know, just last week, like you said, there was a conference call with writers around the country, and it went a full hour. Probably wanted to go a half hour, and then you know, it just went on and on. And for some reason, I was chosen as the first guy to ask a question. And you know, before I did, I congratulated him on a wonderful career. And you know what he said to me? He says, "Ah, God bless you, John." He says, "Nice to hear your voice."
You didn't know that he even knew what your voice sounded like, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, what do I do with that? It's nice to hear my voice. It's like, what's wrong with this? And it's like, my goodness. It's anyway. He's a treasure, and we'll all miss him. And you know, he's the one Dodger, right, that Giant fans can love.
Absolutely, and I think one of the greatest compliments that you could give a broadcaster is other announcers imitating him. And John Miller, of course, I think does the best. Vin Scully even does it in Japanese. And that just tells you, I mean, this guy is great that others are trying to emulate him or at least imitate him. There were so many minor league announcers, John, that I couldn't believe how they were trying to sound like Scully and they couldn't even come close. But there's one guy I remember in San Bernardino, and I was walking by and he had a pregame show that started earlier than mine did. And he was going, "Pull up a chair. Pleasant good evening to you wherever you may be." And I'm going, "Wait a minute. That's Scully's line. You can't use that."
Right.
But it's a great compliment to him, right?
And I interviewed him for about 45 minutes the other day for this story, and he, at one point, it was Miller doing John Wayne doing Scully.
That's pretty good.
I don't remember hearing this. This is going to be good. Luckily, we had a videographer there.
Well, everybody has a favorite call. Now, for me, I was actually living in New York in 1986, and I was at Game 6, the Buckner game, 86 World Series. And the funny thing is, I didn't get to hear the Scully call live, but when I watched it on my VHS tape, I just thought it was the greatest call, the way he just said, you know, ground ball up along first, behind the bag, here comes Knight, and the Mets win it. And then, you know, as we've talked about before, he let the crowd just play. He didn't say anything for a long time, which is really a skill that other announcers don't get. I mean, I think that's really important. And then he came back and said, if a picture paints a thousand words, you have just seen a million of them. And I can almost guarantee that wasn't scripted. I mean, it's just something that he thought of, and it's just, you know, perfect. The man was perfect in the way he came up with his words, you know, his vocabulary. He was so eloquent.
And nobody does silence like Scully.
Right.
It seems like nowadays everyone feels the need to speak every second of the broadcast.
And right.
As he said, especially when he got on the TV, why? You can see what happened.
Right.
And even the Koufax complete the perfect game, there was silence. After the Gibson home run in the 88 series off Eckersley, there was silence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he called Milo Hamilton was doing the Aaron home run that surpassed the Babe, but obviously Scully did it because they played the Dodgers that day, and that might have been a longer silence than all of them. And then he came back and talked how about it was just a great moment for the city of Atlanta and the country and the world, because here was this black man in the Deep South breaking this cherished record of the Babe from generations earlier, and he just gave you goosebumps when you hear that. And John Miller spoke about just that. You know, he says that's his favorite call, the Hank Aaron call. And
mm-hmm.
and you sort of, and it's not just silence, but he's the only guy in the booth. So when he doesn't talk, nobody talks. There's no color guy. There's no analyst who's going to butt in. And by the way, who would be Vince Scully's analyst? I mean, a guy who played in the 80s? Like, what's he going to tell Vinny? Oh, when I played? No. This guy covered Jackie Robinson and Pee Wee Reese, and he goes back to Ebbets Field. He doesn't need an analyst.
No, yeah, the longevity is remarkable in itself. And it's kind of a bummer, though, that he wouldn't be around for the postseason. I mean, I know he's marking that date from when the first time he you know, heard about the Giants in the World Series. But I think a lot of Dodgers fans were hoping that he'd at least carry it through the postseason. Who knows, into a World Series with the Dodgers. But, you know, he was adamant about that. And he also doesn't want to make it about himself, which is great to hear, too. I mean, you know, he's humble about it and doesn't want to be selfish about anything.
Yeah, greatness reaches a higher level with humility. He's humble, and maybe that's rare for a superstar. He's a superstar, yet he's humble, and he doesn't want to put himself in front of the game, and he doesn't want to say goodbye after the first round. And then, you know, if they lose, he's got to say goodbye. Well, then now you got the LCS. He's going to say another round of goodbyes if they lose. Okay, now we're in the World Series, and it just got to the point where, you know, that's enough. Let's call it quit in San Francisco. And I think that October 2nd date, I think that's more of a coincidence. I think he was gearing toward that all along, and then somebody pointed out, by the way, that's 80 years to the date that you got hooked on baseball, from
right.
October 2nd, 1936 to October 2nd, 2016. And he said, oh, yeah, okay, we're coming
that
full circle. That works, and it's he doesn't. He was asked to be part of the Fox World Series broadcast, even if the Dodgers don't go. He was asked just to do the World Series on Dodger radio and TV if the Dodgers make it. And he said no to everything because he thought that he would put himself in front of the game.
Right. Well, we will get to hear him on the Giants broadcast. I understand one inning, I guess, radio and television. Is that right?
Exactly. KNBR
yeah.
third inning and CSN third inning. But, of course, those of us with satellite radio, we could hear him all nine innings. And I've been listening to some complete games of his lately. And that's really cool, knowing that he's only got a handful left. He's doing all home games except for those three in San Francisco.
Speaking of goodbyes, we're not really saying goodbye. This is our last regular season podcast. We'll remain optimistic that the Giants will make the postseason, and we'll keep podcasting. So, but we'll see what happens. I mean, it's going to be a very eventful last 10 games of the season, John. I appreciate everything that you've done during the regular season, and let's hope that we're talking again in a postseason scenario.
That sounds great, Joe. We'll take it as it comes.
That's John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. Join us again on Saturday. We'll chat with Steve Bitker from KCBS in San Francisco. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com and now on canbr.com.